handy dandy-o. Heave a ball and heave away. Way, hey, roll and go. The anchor's on board and the cables are stored to be rolling in Randy Dandy-o. We're outward bound for Fallypo Bay. Way, hey, roll and go. Get cracking, me lads, it's a hell of a way to be rolling in Randy Dandy-o. Heave a ball and heave away. Way, hey, roll and go. The anchor's on board and the cables are stored to be rolling in Randy Dandy-o. Heave a ball and heave away. Way, hey, roll and go. The anchor's on board and the cables are stored to be rolling in Randy Dandy-o.
His father and his grand are working in a boat, you're building on the River Thames. One day Chip was hard at work, the devil appeared from her. He had a roll of copper and a bucket full of nails. The devil said, "And the Chip, take these nails and copper roll, but you also have to take this rat, and I will take your soul." Chip despised the rat, and the rat squealed and hissed, but the bucket of nails and copper were too much to resist. Set to work, he took rid of the rat, and there would not be a problem with this death of terror. But the devil wouldn't die, no matter how hard he tried. The rat attacked the boat right, and he bit him in the eye. As soon as hit the river on smell and the Satan smell, they followed Chip around and made his life a living hell. He slowly lost his mind, he lost his family, he lost his job and had to join the king. The gangplank up the ship, and they bit him and they tortured him until he finally flipped. He stood to the captain to turn around his rig. The captain spied his madness and they chucked him in the brig. The devil had his man, he knew just what to do. He'd command the rats into the planks they pursue. The water rushed in and the ship went down. She was smashed upon the rocks on which the rats danced around.
broken heart a ticket home. And I ask you now, tell me what would you do?
I'm addicted to holding pain and passion deep inside. I'm afflicted by the feelings in me they'll not be denied. Out in the crowded street to the strangers that I meet, the Irish in me will not be denied. It's hard for me to hide my Celtic pride, pain and passion. Oh, my moment in the limelight never.
And a very, very, very good day to you, my friend.
Hello.
Hopefully you are enjoying a little grog of some green beer and a little corned beef and cabbage.
I'll say yes, but no.
All right, let me get
snuck up on me.
Yeah, I understand. Let me get this rolling here. Here. Hang on. Turn off the music. Got to take off the Bluetooth. Got to do a couple of settings like I always do. Let's see, this goes closed. And then, you have a good week?
It's been busy, very busy.
Yeah, I understand that. Okay. All right. 1, 2, 3, 4. Okay, test, test, test. All right. All right, here we go.
Hello and welcome to Dvorak Horowitz Unplugged, an hour-long discussion of activity in the financial markets around the world, featuring columnist John C. Dvorak and money manager Andrew Horowitz. This conversation is casual and unrehearsed. Let's join John and Andrew now.
Hi, I'm John S. Dvorak, the understudy. I'm still here.
The understudy? I'm Andrew Horowitz. Yeah. I don't think so. You got your rightful place here. I'm Andrew Horowitz. How are you, man? It's Tuesday, 3/17. It is St. Paddy's Day in most of the world. Most people are enjoying their, hopefully, a little bit of corned beef cabbage, a little bit of Iver's beer, and what is it, Killian's Red or something delicious, maybe a Guinness and a Jameson. You know, John, have you been to Ireland?
I've never been to Ireland. I'm very, I admire their corporate taxes.
Yeah, well, the lack of. And that's why we saw those reverse mergers over the years and people going over there and doing some amazing things, particularly the healthcare companies back, what was it, like 20 years ago? Mm. And Ireland did an amazing job at creating a haven for corporations, which, of course, brought in a terrific economy, right?
Yeah.
That was great. Smart of them. We get pissed off about it, like, look what they're doing. Come on. Great job. Got to applaud them for that.
They've also had some good companies, like the Square, which did start here, is at heart an Irish company.
Now called Block. Block.
Not Square. I'm thinking of Stripe.
Stripe, yes. Stripe is great. Stripe's an amazing company.
Yeah, they're great. Everything about them, even technically.
Cool stuff. Let's talk about what's going on tonight. I'll give you a little bit of a rundown of some of the things we're talking about. We're going to talk about the bogus oil prices. We're going to look at Gemini and what John S. Dvorak, JC, can do with it. And it's pretty amazing stuff. We have some links in the show notes that we'll talk about, as well as the table and the, what we're calling that, the dashboard, I guess? The workable dashboard?
It's a toy. It's a model. It lets us see how unlucky and unfortunate Singapore is.
Yeah, no kidding. Markets needed good news, and they got it. Correlations are high. They got some okay news, which is good enough for markets to believe there was actually good news. The Fed out with their rate decision tomorrow on Wednesday, the 18th of March. Just by the way, 2 days away from my birthday. Thank you very much.
Happy birthday.
Yeah, I'll be turning another year. And you cannot let me forget, because I forgot last time. We forgot. I have a limerick. You know, if you listen, John, you've listened to the show for years. We do limericks. Mm-hmm. We do Fed limericks. We have some fun with it. We grade it. Your dad would come on and we'd read it, and I would step over myself all the time. Somehow I could read long paragraphs without flaw. A limerick? Not good. Not good. And he would rate them and usually give them a pretty piss poor rating. But speaking about your dad, John C. Dvorak, give us the latest update.
Well, he's probably coming back on the show next Tuesday. He's finally being dispatched. What is it called? Released tomorrow, which is a nice change of pace because he is very tired of the food at that hospital, as well as the television options.
I talked to him last on Saturday, I think it was.
Yeah.
He called from an unknown. First of all, my phone didn't respond because it was silenced, as it was an unknown phone number. So I don't know where he called from. Maybe he picked up the phone in the hospital.
It was a bunker deep underground.
Yeah, I think so. Safe. He called me and he apologized to me. I'm like, what? What are you apologizing? It was kind of like, it's funny, you know, I get it. You know, you get ill and all that and you don't want people around you to feel the pain. Mm-hmm. But that was pretty close to the most emotional attachment and closeness I've ever felt for John.
Oh, yeah. I think
he showed his vulnerability.
Yeah, it does exist.
We just have to take out a couple of aortas and
just mix it around a little bit. Just scramble them up.
We're also going to talk about the markets. Did we just correct? That's a question I was thinking about because in the new markets, a correction is like 3%. Historically, what do we got? 10% is the real number. Whoever made this up, they wanted a round number. So 10% is considered a correction. 20% is considered a bear market. But that was the numbers we saw for years. Maybe this 3, 4, 5% dips of small caps down 7, internationals down 9 from the peak. Came back up a little bit from there last few days as the dollar weakened a bit. Oil just kind of hovered, didn't move that much higher. Clipped 102 over the weekend, came back down to about 95, then 94, with no real palpable change in what's going on in the Straits of Hormuz. But which, by the way, the Straits of Hormuz, not straight at all.
Oh, no. It's But it's in the closet.
It's like a boomerang. It's like the boomerang.
Yeah. Did you see the jet fuel prices?
Oh, my. Talk about that. That's unbelievable, right?
Yeah. It certainly doesn't tell the same story as crude.
So tell, is it?
So one big difference is like, yeah. So we got like three weirdnesses going on. One is the price of oil over in the Strait is a fair deal higher than it is on paper.
Right.
Last I checked, it was like 140 versus, what is it, 90 right now?
95, yeah, something like that. Well, WTI, Brent was still like 102.
Yeah. But the price in the Strait was north of 140 when I checked yesterday, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And it's probably higher today, or maybe a little bit lower because Iran is sending tankers out. And then also we have tankers coming through now, but only if the deal was not done with the petrodollar. So there was a couple Chinese tankers that got through specifically because they said, hey, we're doing with the yuan.
What are they doing? They're flying a flag or something saying, hey, we're paying with the, they put a big yuan flag up or something. How do they know?
All through radio conversations.
Oh, I guess. Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
And then China is heavily dependent on Iran's oil. So they may have worked out a deal by just just chatting. They already have sort of trade agreements and they are also working on a pipeline together. So it would make sense that they could say, hey, we're not helping the US. Just let us, we'll settle this with Taiwan. Let's just get this thing through. The Chinese social media is full of videos right now of people, crews that are just complaining. Like if you look through, you're going to have to use like a translator. You translate to like straight from moves to Chinese and then search that for video content. And you'll have a lot of people complaining about how they're stuck there and they want to go on the other side. And they weren't planning to be on a ship this long because the conversations are going on that might be months.
Oh.
So if they can just get around it by not going via petrodollar, then that would help their like Iranian strategy and certainly piss off America.
But, you know, it's interesting. Think about that for a second. So this is people who are feeling like that COVID shut in when they were stuck on the boats. Remember all the people, we had people here. I would fish off the coast of Fort Lauderdale and we'd see all the Carnival and Norwegian cruise lines and the Princess. Yep. They're all sitting out there anchored. All these people are stuck on the boat, mostly crew. And we would go around and they'd be the shouting at us and, you know, asking us to somehow, I don't know, what are you going to do? Jump in the water, we'll pick you up. I don't know. You know, it's a long way down. But if you think about that and the post-traumatic stress disorder that you'll get from being shut in, trapped, are you going to want to get back on for another ride on the other side?
Well, there was talk of trying to maybe fly them out. But that won't work either because you still need to man these ships. You can't just let them go. So these companies are in a situation where they can't really let them, you know, can't be like, all right, everybody, you get shore leave for the next 6 months.
Right. No, but I think this is going to cause a problem for the crew or crew in general that would be like shell shocked. They don't want to get on. First of all, they don't want to get on a boat because they're afraid that maybe they're going to get killed. Number one, they don't want to get on a boat because maybe they're afraid that they're going to have to be stuck. And that bears another good question. These are big ships, of course, with incredible galleys and storage facilities. But if they didn't plan on going this long, what are they doing for food and things of that nature? Water's not a problem. They have reverse osmosis. They have water makers. That's not a problem. Electricity, probably not a problem. They have limited use of electricity for basic things. They're charging batteries. They have generators. Obviously, the generators need fuel. Hopefully, they won't run out of that. They probably won't because they store a good amount of that. So it's really the food issue. Now, maybe they can fish, they could do, but probably not.
Probably not.
So they're bored as hell. They're stuck on this boat with a bunch of people that, you know, may or may not be friends, and they miss their family. They're probably still getting paid. The ships, of course, are having to bear the brunt of the cost. It's a disaster.
It does make me wonder, are there any cruise ships in the area?
I mean, no.
Dubai has I believe cruises that do go through that region.
There are, but the cruise ships are having a bigger problem. They'd rather stay off right now because the fuel costs are killing them.
Right, yeah.
That's a real problem. I mean, the airlines came in out. American Airlines came out today with a good outlook, which it was Delta. Delta came out with a good outlook today, which I thought was really fascinating because the airlines have been down anywhere from 15 to 20% this year. Most of that happened over the last month and a half. There was concern about a slowing economy. There's a concern about slowing business. And now this situation where people are going to be reluctant to travel, because that's what happens, especially into certain areas. Like, who's flying into Dubai right now for a quick jaunt of a week vacation? Probably limited.
The prices are amazing, though. It's $20 a night.
Yeah. But, you know, and of course, $20 a night, and that's in either your room or in the underground basement for the bomb shelter. Either one, they'll charge you the same.
But now it's an experience.
But yeah, experience a war like you've never seen it before in the luxury of Dubai.
If their tourist board understands, they should definitely pitch that.
So let's talk about this. Let's get back to the oil issue because you're talking about oil prices. You're using one of your father's favorite words is bogus.
Yeah.
And
family word.
And there's this active conversation that you were telling me about. And this warning about manipulation of oil futures to manage the situation.
All right. So we have a couple of interesting rumors that showed up in the news. One was the statement that they will not manipulate the futures, which is it's odd to be told that. And the second one is that the futures are very strange. Like December was coming in at $70 right now. And when we look at if we use a simple model that was devised back in like 2011 by CNA, which is the Gemini link, where I just was like, hey, I just want this model printed out. So this model is very simple. So it is based on, what's known as input output analysis, which is, the assumption that the, essentially, production technologies are fixed in a short run of 90 days, which means companies can't immediately switch over to an input. And so the oil industry in particular has this specific input, which is the crude. And then from that, we can assume a simple multiplier effect from like Keynesian ideas here, where there's some sort of propensity to consume and that there's a knock-on effect to a slowdown of a given sector. And then lastly, that unemployment can be interpreted by something known as the Okun's law, which is that about 3% decrease in GDP leads to a 1% increase in unemployment. And then last element to the whole magic of the math is that energy modeling form rule, which is that oil prices rise by about $5 to $6 per every million barrels of disruption. And so we have 20 million barrels per day disrupted right now. And so when you do put all those numbers in, you don't get 90.
Right.
You get
much higher.
And it depends on what your expectation of how long this event is. You only get 90 if you think the market's going to be, it's going to be resolved in 1 week, but it's already been more than 1 week. So if we assume, I think most people can assume maybe like this has got 8 more weeks left in it, the price should be around 148, which is also the price that we're seeing over in the Strait. And so what's the delta? What's causing this gap? Is it like we really expect it to be resolved really fast or is the market assuming that we're about to flood it with the SPR instead of let it, you know, like we, instead of just going, hey, we're going to release, you know, 20 extra million every day. We're going to release 40 because F these people, we're just going to destroy the price. Or is what's happening is that they're selling futures on the market with the fact that they know it's backed by the SPR they can release.
Yeah. I mean, that's an interesting thing. And then you also have the Russian tankers.
Yep.
Supposedly we, you know, I think this is fascinating. The whole, it's not the political discussion. It's the war gamesmanship.
Yes.
Whereas we said, hey, UK, Europe, you guys, you need to help us over in the Sea of Hormuz. You need this fuel also. You need this gas also. You need the oil. You get in there and help us. And they're like, you know what? No. You know, you treated us badly with the terror. Maybe they're going to use this for this. I think gives them a real up on the board for negotiation. You want us over there?
Yep.
Okay. You know, remember those little tariffs that you put on us? Drop it. You know, we're not in the best bargaining position. We pissed off a lot of people around the world. But the thing is that you talked about something very important. And then we're going to get to the model in a second. I want to talk about that. And we're going to talk about manipulation. So there's a lot that we're going to unpack here. Current oil prices, $95, round number, okay? Yep. December contract, currently trading, as you said, in the 70s, about $75. That is a term, something we're going to teach right now called backwardation.
Yep.
Backwardation is the concept that the future price of the oil, and that's what they call them, futures, right? You're buying the future yep. something. The future could be higher, it could be lower. Oftentimes, the future of oil is that it's somewhat higher than it is today. That's the concept. That is the normality. That's what's called, that the futures are what's called contango. I don't even know where they got these words from. But contango is the normalized way that futures work, that somewhere in the future, it's going to be somewhat more expensive. It could be just a small amount. And there is in lies where a lot of people lose money in commodities, by the way, John. Mm-hmm. They buy commodity funds, and most commodity funds are just buying futures back with the treasuries, back with TIPS, treasury inflation, protected securities, yeah. as the baseline, because you always have to have collateral against the futures contract. And what they do is they buy, and by the way, we did this for many, many years too, because it was really no good way to get good futures exposure except for doing this. And what we did was we would buy the front contract, current contract. And when it rolled, what happened was you're paying usually a lower price for it, hoping for it to, you know, you buy the price and the hope is for in the future, it's worth more, right? But the fact is you roll it and you got to pay a higher price usually, and then it comes down. It just never really worked right. The contango model of that really benefits the old bid and ask concept. You know, you buy something lower, you hope to, and you sell it higher, but the bid-ask concept is you're usually buying at the ask. You're buying at the price that somebody else will sell it to you, and then when you sell it, you're selling at the lower price. Same concept to a degree, a little bit warped, but with contango. Backwardation is the opposite. You're buying the future at a lower price. You're buying a $75. That will be in December. Now, if it spikes up, of course, it's still the December contract. It's got to adjust. That's where we are now. The idea is, just to put a fine cap on what you were saying, the most people think that not only will this be over in relatively short order, it will be orderly, it will be organized, it will be non, it will be not lasting very long. And September is not that long away. It's going to go down to $75. Mind you, a $75 is still not a normal price. It's still elevated compared to where it was in the let's say low 60s, something like that.
We also, like, there's some arguments that can make this make sense, I think. Like, for instance, there is demand destruction if we keep going up.
Correct, of course.
And we already see that with the with two different forces. One is we have the cost of jet fuel. And then we also have the fact that we might not release the strategic reserve as strongly. Like, we can do it a little slower, which will keep the price up too high, and we'll have to start pulling it back with less shipping and less movement of goods. And we already see in Asia, they're trying to switch over to a 4-day work week to try to, and that's already demand destruction. They're already trying to switch down to using less electricity and less power for their just day to day. So it's sort of a lockdown, just like COVID.
You know, the problem we have here is that no one knows. I think the reason why, and yes, I think the SPR release is something. The idea that we have a war that is X number of days to go is preposterous. Now, but that's what they're trying to say to us, and I think that is tamping down the average person saying, well, you know what, at any point, really, because we know there's a lot of uncertainty when it comes to our particular government body these days. That they may say, you know what, tired of the war, let's move on. You know, let's attack hot dogs. Let's tell hot dogs should be made with much better with natural casing. Get all, you know, presidential order to outlaw artificial casings.
Yeah, move on.
Yeah. So here's what's happening. Gas prices. There's a table here. We're going to look at show notes for episode number 794 on dhunplugged.com. And gas prices on January 1st to March 16th in various cities. You see that link there?
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about Chicago, and from $2.95 on average on January 1st up to $3.65, a gain of about 23%. The highest is in your neck of the woods, 31%.
Yep.
And where's Miami? 24%, right in the middle. So California, of course, up the most with Los Angeles. Lowest is what? Seattle, up 21%. But generally speaking, what, up to, we'll call it, what, average 25-26%?
Yeah, it's like 24 or something.
So that's a big problem, because that's where the lasting issue comes in, the demand destruction that you talked about.
Yep. Yeah, which can cause all sorts of very funny shapes in the curves.
Right.
But we also have a slowdown in business anyway by just increasing flight prices, because business runs on top of flights. That's where all the meetings are done.
Is this actually a good thing, do you think, for a company like Zoom? From an investor sentiment standpoint, looking for alternatives to higher prices, if they're not doing the meetings, they're not going to stop doing meetings.
Yeah, it's true. It's just sales guys hate Zoom. It probably will be helpful for Zoom, but how many more customers can Zoom get? Like, they don't make more money for more calls. They actually, their costs increase. The ideal scenario for Zoom is that every company has Zoom subscribe, and they have the big expense of professional, enterprise edition, and then they never use it because that keeps the cost down. Having the cost usage go up is just, it's going to nick into their model.
So
like, who doesn't have Zoom?
It's a good point. Good point. And if you don't have Zoom, you have Teams.
Yeah. Which means, well, I mean, Google Microsoft's always a good sale.
Yeah. Just to put, some rubber on the road when it comes to what's happening on the start of the world war in March, give or take March 2nd, Zoom was $72.72.
Mm-hmm.
Today it's $72.79. So not moving.
Yeah. No, it's not. It's not going to move anyway until we see. I can see the masses think that Zoom is going to go up. But it's not going to happen until people start saying, oh, yeah, we're canceling flights. So, like, at a lot of companies, they during COVID, they actually just said no travel. Like, we're just not traveling anymore.
Right.
And then when we had certain spikes right after COVID, that was also very common as a way to control costs. It's just like, no, nothing unless it's approved by like an L, like high level ranking leadership. So if we see the same thing happen, because, you know, flight prices double again, then we could see Zoom go up, because people will think, oh, I know, they're going to Zoom more.
Yep. Let's talk about and get through this, because we can talk about this. But I want to talk about the Trump administration. You touched on this, about the idea of potential manipulation of oil prices, and particularly of selling the futures. We talked about that. And when you said they, I think you were talking about the U.S. administration. So the U.S. would just sell future contracts and deliver those prices at the end of the contract date, maybe utilizing oil from the SPR, maybe Venezuela, but then you'd have to, there's different oil there. But okay, so we do something like that. So when we initially brought this up as a topic to talk about tonight, I was thinking about it. You know, it reminds me of, first of all, the government has a very heavy hand. They leave a very large footprint on whatever they touch. And do you remember back in 2008 when they decided to get involved in making sure the financial system didn't just topple? And they did something. One of the things they did was, for a short period of time, they banned short trading, short selling of financial firms. The Citibanks, back then it was the Merrill Lynch's, Lehman, all the ones that were pretty much going out of business, right? And Bear Stearns. And markets said, really? I think that was a signal that things are a lot worse than is being presented. Stock prices continued to fall during the ban, tended to only stabilize after the ban was lifted, suggesting, of course, and that the ban didn't stop the decline. So I guess government intervention in this level would just solidify that there are a lot of problems. What do you think?
Well, I think that they have almost certainly learned from showing their hand too early. We saw like a lot of activity happen around, what was it? Right around, I feel like last Trump administration, we ended up seeing a lot of funny business that was happening right in the beginning of COVID to try to keep things from going to circuit breaker.
Right.
I'm trying to remember what it was.
There was a lot of things. There was just a billion things. They were talking about, you know, shutting things down, not shutting things down. They're talking about stimulus in the beginning, making sure that, you know, only certain thing. And then they said they weren't, till the last second, they said they weren't shutting down the country.
Yeah. So just recently there have been large whales that have been buying futures. It's in very strange positions, such as let me get it again.
You're talking about oil futures.
Let me get the gossip I found. A few different things. Couple things we learned from 2007, 2008. The government has more than the simple tool of using, the big hand of changing the laws and like banning short selling. They also have the ability to just call up large financial institutions and demand them to take certain actions.
Oh, the Pledge Protection Team.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I remember
And
the
so,
PPP.
yeah, exactly. And so you don't need to necessarily see the US government try to mess with the oil futures market directly. It can just simply say, hey, I hope you want to have a nice next few quarters because here's what you're going to do.
Right.
And this is what your desks need to do. And you could do that fairly cheaply first. You don't have to do any of the big heavy-handed stuff. And that is enough to move the market because you just demand the market makers to shift. We see, is it Citadel that's currently being investigated for?
Everybody's being investigated. Ken
So
Griffith's
there's
company.
a. That's a pretty useful tool if you are, inspired a little bit from mafia movies. You can go and say, oh, yeah, it looks like you're being investigated. You know what you need to do? You need to buy a ton of oil futures.
Right? Little greasy leverage.
Yeah. And so
You're
that would
buying protect.
be,
You want to buy some protection?
yeah, this looks like you're going to have a pretty bad time with the courts. You know what would make it a lot easier is if oil doesn't go up. Because if it goes up, it makes it look like Iran is winning, and we need to not have them think this is working. Because if they
I
think it's.
really hope, listen, John, I really hope that it doesn't get to the point where you see that right now, because that kind of stuff backfires badly.
Yes, it does.
And it
There's a
really,
lot of things that would be bad. But the fact that we see the oil price is so different means there's some thesis that I'm not familiar with, which seems to be thinking. And oil guys are not dumb. They don't generally seem to be a dumb crowd for like they're the ones who could sniff out the COVID thing really fast. And we're like, yeah, that's zero. That's negative. We're not touching it. And they did that very fast. So they're either well aware that this does wrap up in a week, which is what the pricing seems to imply, or that we don't have information right now and it's distorted. And the only reason why we have the prices of we're only getting the price information from cases where the material, the actual molecule has to be delivered, such as in jet fuel and in the actual tankers, those prices matter. And they, you have to have the jet fuel to go into the airplane. And then we also know from like how much Asia will pay for it because they need it.
Yeah, and there's some talk about, I was listening to some fascinating discussion about a new hub and spoke model that's maybe having to be dealt with, where India is going to actually export some of the oil they have coming in to places like Singapore, to Vietnam, and to other places that don't have any production, and how this may be a new thing for diversification, because a lot of players are like, wait, 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 just like after COVID. Remember after COVID, what the big thing was? It was like, wait, 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 wait. Where are we getting our stuff? China? Wait a second. They're closed? What do you mean they're closed? It's the same kind of thing. We get our oil from over. Oh, what do you mean they're closed? And all of a sudden we shifted. What do? We started doing our production in places like Indonesia, in Vietnam, in Cambodia. We started looking at other emerging market areas, particularly in Asia and other areas, to diversify away from China, because never again was it going to be allowed for this to happen.
We
So.
can possibly see that happening right now as well. So the his what we were doing for the, since the first Gulf War was the movement of a strategy of empire that was based on choke points. If we control all the choke points, it'll be fine. And then I think what we're learning since COVID is that the choke points are also Achilles' heels, and maybe we need to actually not have those.
Exactly. This reminds me, though, of how we're not allowed to take water bottles into the airports because, well, two things. One, because they found somebody had a water bottle and had something in it on the plane. But of course, they decided it was also a profit model that they could make you jump your water beforehand and then have to buy water once you get inside.
Yeah, that's
Or,
a trillion-dollar industry, I'm
yeah,
sure.
exactly. Yeah. But this is the same kind of thing. It's like we only did this after the fact. After the fact, we decided that, oh, look at this. Look at all these ships. Never, no, nobody of all these smart guys and gals that are talking all this stuff, nobody said, you know, it looks like we could have a real problem if this happens. Whatever. What's happening also is we have some things going on with economics right now. Inflation, we saw last Friday, the PCE prices. This is, I say this every time, you don't know I say this possibly, or you do. This is the Fed's preferred index of inflation, their preferred guide, their preferred number. This is the personal consumption expenditures by individuals. Mm-hmm. Basically, it was elevated. Stayed about 3%. We can kind of go back and forth and look at it. It still is not inclusive of any of the oil. One of the interesting things is with this decision coming tomorrow, I don't think the Fed's going to move. I don't think until the next Fed chief takes over that the Fed is really inclined to do anything. Right now, they're just in lame duck territory. And I think it's important to recognize that there's no reason to do so right now. One of the things that may happen is that there's going to be a lot of hair-raising moments over the next couple of months when inflation comes in much hotter than anticipated due to the higher cost of fuel. People are going to start getting crazy. Oh my God, the Fed's behind the curve again. Here's the problem. You talked about the word that I think is really important, demand destruction. The way to get fight higher prices is with higher prices.
Yeah.
Higher prices begets lower prices because people won't pay. You get higher prices, it's going to slow down something. It's going to slow down the consumption of fuel, or it's going to slow down consumption of goods. People can't afford it. They're going to make decisions on what to buy. And the Fed would be making an epic mistake if they looked at this and said, oh, we have inflation, we need to tighten. Right now, they need to start thinking about keeping things where they are. And I'm reversing some of the things that I talked about before this, before I thought they would have to stay pat, that inflation was going to move higher. Now I think that the general concept of a war and higher prices, as we've seen the spike in oil, is actually a negative to the economy, and the Fed needs to reverse any thought of a tighter policy and go towards a more dovish stance.
Can they?
Don't do anything right now. I think they just don't do anything.
No, can they? I don't know if they could. Like, if they were to, like, there's a lot of danger if they were to just, let's say, just cut rates, especially if the war is about to end in a week.
Right. No, that's what I'm saying. And then we have inflation in there that's baked in. But I think I hate to say what I'm about to say. Forgive me.
Yeah.
Forgive me for this. I think. Potentially, this is a theory in motion, okay? If oil prices are, here comes the word, transitory, then you kind of have to look through that.
Which I think that's what we're seeing in December prices, in September prices.
Yeah, and if that is the case, you can't look at this as an inflationary predicament. I'm talking about the oil prices now. Now, forget about everything else. I'm talking about just the oil, the component of inflation that is related to oil. You got to take that out of, scrape that right out. Now people say, what do you mean scrape it out? I pay for that. I get it. But what that causes is a slowdown in the economy more than the inflationary effect.
Yeah.
So here's some economics that came out. There's a table again in the show notes, episode number 794. By the way, when you're over in the show notes, while you're over on dhunplugged.com, one of the things that you should be doing, if you haven't done so already, is the old slam that yellow button. And by the way, what happens, this is pretty fast. I don't know if you know this. This is pretty fascinating. When you hit that button, each time you hit it, it helps John C. Dvorak get better. The more you hit that button, I'm telling you, it like revives him. It's like blowing air into a balloon. It gets stronger and stronger. It gets strength. So go over there, hit the yellow button. It says donate. Donate to the show if you want to have the high-quality product that we have, that we haven't missed a beat, even though one of us is even out. Go over to DH Unplugged right now. Donate to the show. Tell John how much you love him. And make it matter. Make it count. And we thank you for your support.
And for the gentle listeners, you don't need to slam it. You could just do a little light caress.
Very nice.
A little touch.
Oh, a little touch. It works just as well. Sometimes better.
Yeah.
Here's some of the notes, the notes on the economics that came out. We said durable goods orders actually at zero, prior was down, so that's actually good. It probably blends out a little bit. Personal income was up about 0.4%. Personal spending up 0.4%. Personal spending was actually a little bit higher than the forecast, which was good. Prior was 4.4. Nothing's really changing here. If you look at all this, we can go through all this. GDP second estimate was 0.7. The forecast was for 1.4. GDP is coming down a little bit. That's for the fourth quarter. That's down more than it was anticipated. And the University of Michigan consumer sentiment, the preliminary for March, which is interesting, was 55.5. The prior was 56.6. Not that far off with the fact that we've had this war. So economics still holding up. People are not feeling too bad. Let's round out our oil discussion. You want to talk briefly about this link? There's a link also on the page right next to the caressing yellow button. It says JSD explains oil models. Very cool.
That was the model I just discussed. So that was the, yeah. This is the model that's based on a paper from.
How'd you do this? Can you tell me how you did this?
So you can use Gemini if you pay for it and turn on its canvas. And the very simple trick is you go and grab something from like SRNN or any of the other nice papers on finance. Go grab one of them. Somebody's made some model, some quant. This guy was, you know, giant glasses. And he wrote like, you know, 20 pages and it's got a bunch of equations in it and he back tested it and it's profitable or whatever. You go and grab that, you copy and paste it, you just copy and paste it, and you throw it at Gemini and you say, hey Gemini, can you make me a visualizer for this? Make me a little toy. Let me plug in variables and just make this. And you turn on the canvas, which allows it to code and make stuff. And then you let her rip. You wait a little bit and you come back, have a nice little tea. And a little walk, you look into the sky, watch the clouds. It takes a few minutes. You come back and you'll have some little custom bit of code that will let you play with that equation. And it saves you, if you can program, it saves you like 7 hours of fudging, finicky work with it. And if you can't code, well, now you have a superpower.
No, that's the point. That's what I'm trying to talk about here is, I mean, seriously, you take what? You take, like, say, you could almost take like a... the Black Scholes model and say, hey, make me a dashboard for this or something?
Yeah, absolutely. That's a pretty common one. And you also can improve upon it because there are modifications to Black Scholes. So for instance, there's a nice one, which is one that identifies regimes. So the Black Scholes doesn't hold up when you're in a sort of, when you have high synchronization of the buyer, when the market's synchronizing. So when it starts oscillating together, that people are starting to like think cult stocks or like GameStop, or how crypto usually works, the cult stocks, Black Scholes starts to misbehave because it assumes a more normal movement and doesn't assume correlation between the buyers so strongly. But there's a Black Scholes extension that supports the idea of a different regime, and that regime is like Dragon King regime, or also known as like Stampede. And you can basically improve the model. So you can get models that, you know, you would pay $1 million a year on some salaried quant to do. And you can just spin it up, and that's the bear case for the professional class with AI.
So this is again, whether or not this is just very cool. I've lack a better way to describe this. I'm sorry, but basically, you know, I shared this. Is it okay that I shared the link?
Oh, it's totally fine. Yeah, it's fine. It's a shared public link. There's two modes. I fixed it. So it's based on the CNA 2011 paper that's 88 pages long, by the way. It's the economic implications of disruption to maritime oil choke points. And we can thank the good William Comis and LaVar Huntzinger at CNA Analytics and Solutions back in March of 2011. And this was done for the U.S. Navy.
And what does the dynamic adaption do? I don't think it changes anything when I click.
So I fixed dynamic adaption is the fact that, so if you turn on static, it'll just... you'll look at like unemployment will go to like 20% and GDP loss will just go down to like 60%. It's ridiculous. Dynamic adaption is based on another model, which is that when you remove oil, alternatives end up being developed. The market reacts and finds alternatives. And so it doesn't. So every additional week that you don't have access to this oil, the people reroute around it. We find new sources. So like if this was about helium, it would be about the fact that there's other helium sources. They're not going to just buy stuff from the Strait anymore. They're going to try to get more American helium or African helium. And so the losses will stop off. It'll stop the culture, the national economy will stop being damaged by this loss, and it will stop bleeding so hard. If you don't have dynamic adaption, we're assuming that it'll just keep getting worse forever.
So, how many of these things, not to get off on a tangent here, but how many of these kinds of canvases have you built?
Whenever I come across like a research paper and it seems interesting and I just want to see how it works, I just spin one up because it only takes a few minutes.
Right, because you basically have it read it for you.
Well, I read it first. I
No, I get
don't
that
have
point.
them.
I get that part. I'm just saying, but you have Gemini read it and say you pull out the calculations and
Yeah, pull out the
methodologies.
calculations in the model and let me play with the model to see if it makes sense. Because some of them don't. Some of them only make sense if you read it because they have very persuasive, they're good writers. But if you actually put it up and you start putting in numbers and you play with it a little bit, you're like, this is ridiculous. Like, for instance, why I added dynamic adaptation to the model was just because there's no way you do not get 60% GDP loss in 16 weeks in Singapore. That doesn't make any sense.
Right. Interesting. Cool
Like,
stuff.
14%? Maybe.
I was blown away when I saw it. I thought it was really cool, by the way. I just thought there's, again, there's a lot of little, look, every time you push a button, things go a little wacko.
Yeah, it's not, it's, this is the era where we all have McDonald's quality software. It's just, it's fast food, but it works.
It works, and I like how the charts smoothly adjust, by the way.
Yeah, it's very smooth.
You know?
I didn't do any of that. I just complained to it and had it adapt.
No, I'm sure you could say, you know what, do this instead. I want a bar chart. I want a 3D. You could probably say that in the background. I haven't seen what the actual canvas back looks like, in the background.
Yeah.
But pretty cool. Very cool. And what does Gemini canvas cost? Let's see. I'm going to bring this up right here. I guess it's free. Oh, yeah.
No, it's you want the Gemini AI Pro subscription? What is
Pro
that for
Plus.
you?
Upgrade to J
Yeah,
Google AI
you
Plus.
want. Yeah, it's actually a steal. I think it's coming in at $20 or so.
There's the code.
Yes.
Look at that code.
Yeah, AI Pro is $0 for 1 month and then $20 every month after that. Or $19.99 if you believe in pennies.
Very cool. Cool stuff. All right, let's move on. Department of Defense, Department of War. It's
Yeah.
not the
So
defi
yeah.
or the department or maybe with no, well, maybe it's the Department of Offense these days.
I think it's the Department of Identity Crisis. So they're hiring out a financial defense unit. They are reaching out, posting on different forums full of quants and trying to pick up people from Jane Street, pick up people from Citadel, and just hire out a financial warfare unit, or rather something like that. It's some sort of defense unit. It does sound like the Plunge Protection Team quite a bit. But in this case, the fact that it's going to be under the Department of Defense makes me think that we're starting to adapt the idea that warfare is not about like territory control. It's about disrupting the other side's existence in the sense of its whole, the whole body of a society. It's social, physical, economic, every level needs to be approached as part of warfare, including finance, which there's a pretty famous paper. Position paper from China from 1999 that's called Unrestricted Warfare. That's how it translates, and it is the their essentially their position on what warfare looks like.
Well, what's interesting about that is that you look at the social engineering, the illicit trade, the finance. Isn't this already in play? In a very crude, the Strait of Hormuz, where Iran is throwing that, right? They're using a unrestricted warfare. Tariffs, that's financial warfare.
No,
Asset seizure.
that absolutely, but I don't think it's ever been done in a coherent manner. Like
You're
for
talking about
us,
more of a digital manner. That's what you're
no,
talking about.
I'm saying that I think this is done as a how it's been happening is not as a unified strategy. It's been a bunch of different agencies with certain mandates that have been doing this in a non-unified fashion. For instance, though the sort of economic warfare with Russia was all over the place. We were seizing assets, but then we were also letting through oil via India, and then we weren't, and then we were getting them off of SWIFT, and then we realized we shouldn't. And it was not like a coherent basis. So to have the Pentagon say, okay, we're going to set up a defense unit that specializes in an entire team or division that specialized just in the finance aspect and put it under the Department of Defense, that's very different than this sort of somewhat half-assed approach that we've done historically, which is just sort of like we just hurt them, but there's no bigger scheme, I don't think. Like, I think it's just been, what else can we do? Like, oh, we can do that, let's do that.
Well, I mean, it's everything is changing, right? Everything is modernizing. Look at war. War used to be pick up the muskets and let's go. You know, get our swords, our gear, our bow and arrows, let's do it. We get on the thing, stand there, and when somebody blows the front to front, and when somebody blows a whistle, just start shooting at each other, right? And they drop the front line, the next guy pops up. Now we have, it's a drone world after all. It's a drone world after all. We have like Ender's Game. You ever see Ender's Game?
Yeah. Well, I think the craziest part is you see these videos, they're just glowing orbs in the sky, and
Right.
that's now what it looks like. It's frightening orbs, glowing orbs. They're moving around. You don't know if it's gonna fly into your hotel or not.
Right. These drones that are actually being used as kamikazes or as, well, kamikaze second possibly, or carrying a small payload. I looked it up to find out. I was kind of curious about like what size, what are we dealing with here? They're like 3.5 meters long, about 11 and a half feet. They have a wingspan of about 8.5 feet. Their takeoff weight, their mass about 440 pounds, and they typically have about a payload of anywhere from 50 to 60 kilograms of explosive. Some even have about 90. Now, of course, those heavier ones cause more problems for travel, for distance, right? 2,000 drones per day used at the peak so far in the Iranian war. 10,000 per day in the peak of the Ukraine and Russia war.
Yeah, if we chart this, we can kind of see where this is headed. we're going to see a conflict where it's 100,000 a day, because they're also getting cheaper to make, and we're getting more refined in terms of what these actually require. They're just essentially very smart missiles at this point.
Yeah, very smart, controlled, and almost in a way, the idea of missiles, I think, numbs the concept of war. And that's why we're not seeing as much. You don't see bloodshed. You just see a truck blowing up. You know, you don't see
Yeah.
people, you know, with shrapnel in their legs and being amputated. What you see drones flying into a building.
Well, there's a logical continuation that we see in Ukraine, though, where it starts with these sorts of, these explosive loitering weapons. And then over time, we end up having those fly-by-wires using the fiber optics to get, like, with the camera, so you can actually have a human drive them. Because notably, these ones that are flying around, blowing up in Iran, outside of Iran, and going into buildings, these are not flown remotely. They are not like the drones we were thinking about, like during Iraq War, where you had some guy in a trailer in Nevada who was routing through satellites to control a drone out there, and then had post-traumatic stress from destroying so many weddings. We have instead, they're programmed for a location and course. And then they self-correct, and they just go straight and finish their business. So it's a very different sort of much lower tech sort of drone than what we were doing originally with these multi-million dollar Reapers and stuff.
The gaming industry, which is like an extension of what I think this Ender's Game concept of warfare, you were taking a look at this recently, and I think, you know, probably one of the reasons is the gaming industry has come to IRL. You know, I
Yeah.
mean, we is that why it's DOA?
I think it's DOA because of the change in fashion. So